You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News coming to you on this beautiful autumn day in November. I'm joined today by my colleague at Pituitary World News, Mr. Jorge Facinetti.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. Last week, the Center for Pituitary Disorders at UCSF did a conference on the advances in diagnosis and management of pituitary disorders. And it was really well attended by physicians and nurses, physicians assistants, and I think there was a pharmacist too. And I had the privilege to address the crowd. It was really a great experience for me and a bit intimidating. I'm not really quite sure why, because I'm used to presenting, but maybe it's because it hits me somewhat personally. I'm delighted to be here with Dr. Blevins, and we're going to talk about the conference today. So my first question to you is, does anything stand out for you in terms of new things our listeners might be interested in hearing about?
Why, yes, and thanks for asking. As you know, we have an annual conference from the California Center of Pituitary Disorders at UCSF, and it's attended by a wide variety of healthcare professionals, including endocrinologists, neurosurgeons, primary care physicians, nurse practitioners, etc. The intent of the conference is to provide an update to practitioners regarding all aspects of pituitary disorders, and it's more than simply a review of topic. It's intended to provide state-of-the-art reviews to update on the diagnosis and treatment of the different pituitary disorders. This year, our guests included noted neurosurgeon and esteemed radiation oncologist from University of Virginia, Dr. Jason Sheehan, who spoke about radiotherapy for different pituitary disorders and the outcomes as well as the side effects seen in his practice. We also had Dr. Shlomo Melmed from Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, who spoke about the molecular biology of pituitary tumors, management of aggressive pituitary tumors, and also on acromegaly. And of course, our most distinguished guest was you. It was a delight to have you participating in this year's conference and providing a patient's perspective to the physicians and other healthcare providers in attendance. So I wonder if you would share your perspective with us of what it was like to attend a medical conference as a patient and to deliver an address to a group of physicians.
Well, yes, it was a really very interesting experience for me, particularly from a patient's perspective, where you don't get to see discussions at that high level, even though I thought the discussions were very understandable for a layperson. But I really have to thank you, particularly you and Drs. Kunwar and Aji, for inviting me to do this. And have the opportunity to, like you said, present to the group and learn a lot about what was being said. The other interesting thing about participating in a conference like that is that you get to meet some very interesting people. I met a couple of primary care physicians and had some very interesting discussions about their experiences with pituitary patients and recognizing, for example, the early signs of acromegaly. The sort of discussions that bring home the reason why we are doing the work that we're doing with Pituitary World News. There were also excellent presentations from Dr. Kunwar and Dr. Aji on the surgical techniques of pituitary tumors. For me, it certainly brought home the idea that you really want someone who does a lot of these procedures. The figures that were shown on the rate of success of experienced surgeons is really no contest. It's a little bit like taking a Porsche to the Toyota mechanic, no? Why would you do that? So what are your feelings? What take-home messages would you like people to hear about surgical experience and likelihood of success?
Jorge, that's an excellent question, and what we know is that the more experienced the surgeon, the greater the likelihood of a successful outcome. For example, in one study in the UK, one surgeon looked at his experience compared to that of his colleagues, and in fact looked at the likelihood of being rendered disease-free if you have acromegaly in his series was 66% for all cases. It was 86% if you had a macroadenoma. And when he compared his experience to eight other surgeons, the likelihood of success was only 33% compared to the 66%. And for the microadenomas, it was only 54% in the group of eight surgeons compared to his experience of 86%. And that study has really shared with us the information that it does require an experienced surgeon to be able to achieve the levels of success that we expect in pituitary centers of excellence. One other thing that I would say is the rate of complications is much higher with inexperienced surgeons than it is with experienced surgeons. And most of us believe that as an experienced surgeon, you must have more than 500 cases to sort of get the morbidity and mortality ratios down to an acceptable rate. Those surgeons who have done less than 100 cases have a higher incidence of mortality complications, for example, and those surgeons who are over 500 have the lowest rates of complications, whereas those between 100 and 500 cases have intermediate levels of complication rates and mortality. So in general, we look at the more experienced surgeons having greater success of rendering patients disease-free with fewer complications. Now, granted, surgeons have to learn this technique and the procedure, and some patients will be operated on by surgeons who are inexperienced while they're in the process of trying to become good pituitary surgeons. But in my opinion, that should be done under the guidance of a more senior surgeon who can help that younger surgeon develop the judgment, especially the intraoperative judgment and the overall approach to patient care that should be developed during that phase of training or at least learning to become a pituitary surgeon. In further keeping with this notion, there was some information presented at the conference that illustrated that there were 408 hospitals that performed one to four pituitary cases per year in the United States, 140 hospitals that had performed between 4 and 10 cases per year, 68 that had performed between 10 and 24 cases per year, and only 20 centers that had performed 25 or more cases per year. And when we're talking about experience, probably being 50 to 75 or even 100 cases per year, that number probably drops down to about 8 to 10 programs in the United States that have sufficient experience to be able to perform pituitary surgical procedures with low morbidity and mortality and a good success rate. Interestingly, one study looked at the mortality of these different centers and showed that there were higher mortality rates in those centers that just performed a few cases a year compared to those that performed a lot of different procedures each year. One other interesting piece of data presented was that it was about 534 surgeons fit into the group of those who had performed between one and three cases per year. In my opinion, that's unconscionable, and I believe that pituitary disease is unusual and rare and complex enough that patients should be referred to a center of excellence.
I was mesmerized by the MRIs, particularly ones that appear to have nothing wrong, until you or Dr. Kunwar or Dr. Aji pointed out the abnormalities. I thought that was very interesting. And again, it showed to a patient how much experience the doctor has to have to actually see these things. I guess a question I would ask you here is, how many of these cases you guys see where a less experienced team would say, there's nothing wrong?
Well, Jorge, that's a keen observation, and we certainly see a lot of patients who come to us being told that there's nothing wrong with their pituitary whatsoever, and I can think of a recent case of a patient who had acromegaly and was thought not to have a tumor on MRI by the treating endocrinologist and neurosurgeon. The patient ultimately came to see us, and it was very clear that the patient had a tumor growing from the inferior or undersurface of the pituitary gland down into the sphenoid sinus and the clivus. And we were able to take that patient to surgery and render him disease-free with an appropriate straightforward operation. One of the other things that we see are patients who are said to have a pituitary tumor, but there's nothing wrong with the gland. And some of these patients might actually have pituitary hyperplasia that can be physiologic and related to age or menopausal status or the presence of an underactive thyroid gland, while others have an empty cella syndrome and not a tumor, and some others still have a pars intermedia cyst or a Rathke's cleft cyst and are thought to have a pituitary adenoma. So it goes both ways. Patients who really have insignificant or inconsequential findings, as well as patients who are said to have nothing wrong and have major problems that need attention. The part of the conference that you mentioned was basically our chairman of neuroradiology presenting cases to Drs. Agi, Kunwar, and myself as unknowns, where we were required to, in front of the audience of about 50 people, describe the findings on MRI and give our list of differential diagnoses or the things that it could be and commit to an answer. And fortunately, most of us got all of those questions right. So, you know, we see a lot of patients with pituitary disorders at the California Center of Pituitary Disorders at UCSF, have a lot of experience as a result, and have become pretty keen in reviewing MRI studies. However, our neuroradiologist knows that, so he threw us some curveballs that day. It was a great exercise, gave people an opportunity to see how we think and to learn some of the subtleties in the interpretation of MRI studies that take place in a center such as ours. So, Jorge, one of the things that you saw with Dr. Melmed's presentation is that acromegaly is indeed a very difficult disease process to gain control of, with only about 2/3 of all patients with growth hormone-secreting pituitary adenomas being rendered disease-free. That rate's much higher in those with microadenomas and lower in those with invasive tumors, and certainly very low in those with grossly invasive tumors that are more than 4 centimeters in size. But the good news is that through a number of different molecular targets, we can treat patients with medication and at least normalize the IGF-1 and sometimes the growth hormone levels and cause regression of the symptoms and signs of the disease process. For example, with somatostatin analogs, we can probably normalize the IGF-1 level in about 50-55% of patients. Pegvisomant can normalize the IGF-1 levels in up to 90% of patients. Dopamine agonist drugs in roughly about 20-40% of patients, depending on how those patients are selected for study. I know that in your situation, your tumor was invasive and we were unable to render you disease-free from surgery. We tried a somatostatin analog without full success. You had a partial response. And then pegvisomant was necessary to normalize your IGF-1. And of course, we discontinued the somatostatin analog. But I wonder if you could comment on your experiences as a patient having a disease process that you know surgery can't cure, but then being able to, through advances in molecular biology, ultimately be treated with a drug that was able to pretty much shore up your IGF-1 levels and allow you to try to live a normal life without active acromegaly.
Yes. Well, interestingly, I think my perspectives have changed over the years as I get used to living with acromegaly. I was actually thinking about this last week when I was writing the article on acromegaly and belly fat. Boy, I thought, that's not really too much of a problem now, is it? Particularly when you consider the alternative of having uncontrolled active disease. Early, when I was first diagnosed, the tumor was top of mind, no pun intended. As I learned more, and once the medication worked, I became less concerned. Really, I don't know why, because the tumor is still there. But as I started feeling better, I physically, and at least I thought, looked more normal. My fingers deflated, my shoes fit better, my skin had more wrinkles. All of that created for me a sense of wellness and maybe normalcy. I truly believed I could, yes, I can deal with this. And the remaining tumor became less important, not as relevant. I certainly learned to appreciate what these drugs can do for people, and indeed did for me, and continue to do today. So, to answer your question, I'm not really sure what my perspectives are today, because as time passes and my condition remains stable, I feel less and less as a patient. Also, this project, Pituitary World News, has had a tremendous effect because I remain totally convinced that if we generate enough awareness of these conditions, more people can be and will be diagnosed and treated early enough so their conditions are not as debilitating as they could be, and in many cases achieve a complete cure so people can lead a normal life. I have to tell you, your support and partnership on this effort has been invaluable. I really cannot express it in words. I think, as you do, we can really make a difference here.
So, in essence, you're facing a lifetime of medical therapy unless we, at some point, choose to pull the trigger and proceed with gamma knife radiotherapy or conventional radiotherapy to try to treat your tumor, and we'll certainly do that if it increases in size during this period of follow-up. But what, as a patient, would you hope for in the future as far as therapies of these tumors and early diagnosis and treatment for others who might be afflicted by the same condition?
Well, this may sound a bit self-serving, but as a patient, I hope we get the help we need, we, Pituitary World News, needs to fulfill our mission. Because if we are successful in generating increased awareness worldwide, this will result in diagnosing more people that otherwise would go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for decades. And I think this increased awareness will generate more research for better medications, medications that can perhaps act at the molecular level to shrink inaccessible tumors. I hope for increased awareness at the medical school level, more tools for patients, so they are smarter about their condition or about their potential condition, so they have more information when they go see a doctor. Really, I hope for all the things that you and I are working towards, which is to hopefully help more people get diagnosed early.
Jorge, thank you for joining me to discuss these topics in relation to the recent conference held by the California Center for Pituitary Disorders at UCSF in San Francisco. I've enjoyed this discussion and certainly think that we should do this again.
This was great. I really enjoyed the discussion. Thank you very much, Dr. Blevins. And to all our listeners, stay tuned because there are a lot more podcasts and articles on the way. Thank you.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank those who follow us on Pituitary World News for their time and attention, and remind you to send us notes either through Facebook or through our website and let us know what's on your mind and what you would like to learn more about as time passes. Thanks again. Have a good day.